New York Times critic Anthony Tomasini called Mary Birnbaum's stage direction of Rape of Lucretia viscerally overwhelming. She's directed in the Americas, in Europe. She comes to the Santa Fe Opera for the first time this year.
For actually the third time, I assisted here. I assisted directed King Roger in 2012, and I directed scenes for The Apprentices in 2015, so this company has felt like home for a long time.
And you're directing La Boheme, which opens the season.
Indeed. I have the privilege of directing Puccini's greatest love story, La Boheme.
You lived and studied in Paris. Does the Paris experience change what you bring to La Boheme?
I came of age in Paris, actually. I lived there for a year before college, and then I lived there for a year after college studying theater and movement. And both experiences informed what I thought it was to be an artist. And so the experience of the Bohemians is one that I hold very close to my own experiences. Engaging with the city as a person who wants to make things and using the backdrop of Paris to express big emotions. And I remember many times walking down alongside of the Seine, sort of lost in thoughts and creativity, because the city felt like a place where people could create things.
So it still feels that way.
Indeed.
A century or more later.
Indeed. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And my school, Ecole Jacques Lecoq, was very big on facilitating creation out of nothing. They say it's a mime school. It's not really a mime school, but it's mimétique in a way of advising that the creation of theater really comes from the collaboration between people, and you can make extravagant, wonderful, detailed theater out of absolutely nothing. Luckily, that's not the case here at Santa Fe. We're well equipped.
What other influences do you bring to your productions? Art, other styles of music, film, theater?
Well, actually, for this production, one of the things that was the most useful to me is a book called The Virtuous Marketplace. That is a book about the 1800s, sort of commerce and the female body and women's experience in Paris as citizens and as people who were disenfranchised and people who had economic kind of reach and growth in other ways. And that book really informed what I think of this piece, and particularly in the female characters. We actually keep calling the style of the piece that we're making emotionally realistic, because the setting of it and the costumes of it are not necessarily like strict to the letter of the period, but everything feels like expressionistic of what the characters would be perceiving or feeling. So, for example, we go into the city in Act 2, and instead of having the Bohemians traverse a sort of a complicated set, the set comes to us. The city sort of travels downstage and intermingles amongst people and travels around, much like it would feel as if you were in Times Square or something, where there's a motion blur because there's so much sensory information.
Almost like an American in Paris, the real sense musically.
Not unlike that. We looked a lot at sort of representations of Paris throughout the ages, and of course the realist tradition. Courbet is a big influence of mine, and I think Marcello has a sort of a Courbet-like quality to him. But research about the period, the 1830s, and reading about the politics and commerce in the period, to know how the Bohemians had to sort of slot into a culture that didn't value them commercially, and how they had to compromise their creativity, or not, risking death, in order to make it through to the end of the story.
In the notes for the production, you talked about how many times this production can be seen as sort of the four Bohemians and their two girlfriends.
Right.
Obviously, the balance of power has changed in this production, not least, I think, because of the times we're living in right now. Tell me about the characters of Mimi and Musetta and how strong they are, what strengths they bring.
I think they usually feel very prioritized and special in productions of Bohème, but in this production of Bohème, we try to make them feel like artists or artisans. Mimi in Act 1 presents Rodolfo with a handkerchief that she's actually made. She keeps saying, I sew finti fior, fake flowers. And in our version, she gives him one of these things that she's made by hand, which of course is very impressive to him because he's a poet. He deals in abstraction. So if you have something that you've made that you can sell to somebody else, that's a huge difference. And Musetta is a performer. She's actually the show people's conduit into the world. So every single act, we have her begin the act with a gesture. And it's usually about the transition of nature throughout the four acts, the sort of changing of the seasons. But she's our avatar throughout the world, and she's actually an example of somebody who has to compromise their creativity in order to survive.
And in some ways, I think she makes the greatest journey in the opera.
For sure, and we've introduced an element in the famous death scene. We wanted some life and some possibility to be there. So I won't spoil it too much, but there's a little bit of a twist on Musetta's ending.
And she learns from her experience and moves on.
They all do. They all do.
Well, except Mimi, who learns too late.
Indeed. I don't know that she learns anything or whether what she learns is it's better to have loved than not at all.
Is there a takeaway? Is there a unifying message that you want the audience to walk out with?
Absolutely. I want them to walk out with the idea that to live in a culture that doesn't value creativity necessitates compromise of some kind. And the way we can heal our culture, or the way we can incorporate uniqueness and creativity, is by broadening our scope and allowing for many different types of people to thrive and to succeed in this world.